Davis Dennis is John Cuckwood. John is a senior software engineer providing technical customer support for Webster Data Interchange and Webster Partner Gateway. He has assisted hundreds of customers worldwide with installing and implementing Webster Data Interchange. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to John.
Thank you, Elijah, and welcome everyone. Why don't we go to slide 2? We'll go through the agenda. I'm basically going to be covering, in general at first, about what a DB2 stored procedure is and what WLM is and how they interact. And we'll go through how and when WDI uses stored procedures and whether or not you need to use stored procedures depending on your environment. I also included some very refined instructions for enabling WDI stored procedures. We'll go through some common commands to get you through all the different environment issues that you might have, and then we'll go through some problem determination that we've seen in the support center. So hopefully head off any problems before you get started. Let's go to slide 3. What is a DB2 stored procedure? It's basically used for applications such as WDI client to access the database across the network. They run on the server itself, so it combines the programming, you know, like the C++ programming within WDI with SQL statements, and then the client only receives the results that, you know, are returned by the stored procedure. Let's go to slide 4. And the major benefit of this is that it reduces the network traffic in 2 ways. First of all, it only returns the results back to the WDI client. Therefore, you're not going to get back and forth, you know, one SQL statement, you know, all the results sets back to the client, then issue another SQL command, it has to go to the server, come back to the WDI client. All that's done on the host itself, on ZOS, and then the result of all of the programming behind the SQL, you know, is returned only. That is returned, and it very much reduces network traffic. And another key benefit is you can access products that you might only have on the server. And for WDI, a good example here is EDI FFUT. If you know the product, that's obviously the main utility program. That's where you issue all your perform commands. So basically, this is giving you access to that part of the product. So even though the end user is running on a Windows client-based application, they're able to execute, perform commands, all the features of EDI FFUT. Let's go to slide 5. What is Workload Manager? Workload Manager comes with ZOS. Its basic purpose is to just balance system resources, such as DB2, CICS, Batch, TSO, Unix System Services, and WebSphere. And it just takes all of the work and distributes it across multiple address spaces as needed. And DB2 is just one of the applications that use WLM. And again, it's the primary purpose is to just balance the actual work that might be coming in for the stored procedure. WLM determines when to issue more address spaces as necessary, depending on how many tasks are being invoked. Let's go to slide 6. Workload Manager, and again, it does manage the number of tasks that can run in each address space. You wouldn't want too many running in one address space because of the overhead with memory, et cetera, that could start to become a constraint. Now, just a little history about DB2. If you had, you know, prior to version 8 of DB2, you had what was called DB2 established stored procedures, and it didn't run under WLM. It just basically simulated it. In other words, DB2 had its own address space just for stored procedures. And if you use the Workload Manager for stored procedure address spaces, the main advantage is it can manage multiple address spaces again to manage the number of tasks if they become large. Let's move to slide 7. When does WDI use stored procedures? they're not used at all by any batch or CICS processing. So all of your, what you were used to maybe with WDI 3.2, you know, that particular processing, you know, stored procedures are not used at all for anything that you used to do on 3.2, any of your batch jobs, any of your CICS transactions, still work basically the same way as they used to. When the DB2 stored procedures come in is when a WDI client user submits remote type request to have WDI invoke the EDI FFUT utility to perform either remote command submission, which is a new feature of 3.3. It allows you to basically invoke any perform command from the client interface. This is new with WDI 3.3. It could be used with service profiles if you're familiar with those. For more information on how to set up remote command submission from the client, see the WDI 3.3 user's guide. Let's go to slide 8. And lastly, another good feature of when WDI uses stored procedures is in support of processing or reprocessing data from the WDI client document store. The document store is just a new name for the transaction store, if you're familiar with that. It supports all of these functions that you might have been used to: acknowledge, hold, release, purge, unpurge, remove, transform, translate to application, envelope and send, reconstruct, and reconstruct and send. Go to slide 9. Do you need to use stored procedures? These three bullets will cover basically what they're used for, and if you were previously using the EDI DB2 C-list on 3.2 or the EDIA CICS transaction, they no longer are supported on 3.3. In other words, we do not have anymore the green screen interface that you might have been used to. This is all being replaced by the client and this stored procedure functionality. There was also a feature on the TSOC list, just thought I'd point it out. There was a utility command function that you could do from the C list itself. That's also replaced by the remote command submission. So if you use any of these particular functions of the old TSO or CICS EDIA, you will need to implement stored procedures. But if you don't use these, you really don't have to do the stored procedure part of the installation. It could be skipped if you want in that case. Let's move to slide 10. Now I'm going to get into the enabling of WDI stored procedures. This basically is just augmenting what we already have in the installation guide. I tried to give a lot of detail here to help you out when it comes time to try to implement it. You know, some of this functionality or some of these steps are either going to be the system programmer that needs to run it, the DBA, your security racket people. So I've tried to break it up a little bit for you so you could understand what to do and who to go to. But this augments the steps 4 and 5 in section 2.1.11.2 of the installation guide. And how you get started is you would basically create a new WLM application environment. We called it EDI SP01. That's as shipped, but you can really choose any name you want. You use WLM panels. These are part of just your base ZOS product to associate an AE name with the JCL procedure used to start the address space. I gave you a link here that hopefully will help you get through those screens and how to implement the application environment. You need to update the WLM policy with your new AE name, whatever you chose, whether it's EDI SP01 or otherwise. You would create a JCL member in your proc line for the new WLM application environment. Again, we called it EDI SP01. Let's move to slide 11. Here I gave you some sample JCL for the procedure that we implemented. And I just wanted to give you something to start with here. This is basically what you would set up in your proc line. And if we go to slide 12, we'll go through some of the finer points. In this example, again, the procedure name and the application environment name, we made them the same. There's nothing wrong with doing that. That EDI SP01, again, is as shipped. you need to update your DB2 subsystem name in that JCL. You've got step log, which is very important. You need to have your DB2 load lives, your language environment, or LE, SCE run load live, your WDI load live, which is SCDI LMD1. And if you're using any data transformation type translations, you need to have the XML for C load library from the XML toolkit version 1.9. And the name of that goes in there, again, you'll see it back on the reference in the previous slide, SIXMLOD1. I wanted to make a special note here. Realize the installation guide does have a typo. The name of that load live is wrong in the installation guide, so beware of that. The next step you do is you would include a data set for the CD, EDI, TSIM. You would allocate it as fixed block, record length 80. This is used for data interchange. Let's go to slide 13. EDI TSN supplies some basic parameters for the DB2 attachment. I gave you an example here. The plan, EDI ENU 3.3. The system would be your subsystem name. And the CAF would be for your call attachment facility parameter. And it tells that the CAF 8 parameter tells WDI to attach to DB2 using Resource Recovery Services Attachment Facility. It's quite a mouthful. Our SAF. You don't really need to understand how that all works, but just realize that CAF parentheses 8 is what you need to put in there for any WLM address space. WDI ships three stored procedures, EDI ADREC, EDI exec 1, and EDI exec 2. If you didn't use the name as we shipped it, EDI SP01, then you'll need to edit this. This is basically the DDL for creating all of your DB2 objects, EDIS DB2. You'll need to find this create procedure statement. There's three of them, one for each of the procedures. You'll need to change WLM environment to whatever name you chose. And also be aware that the current SQL ID, who's doing all of the creates, like, for example, as shift we use EDI ENU 3.3, requires create in privilege to create a package, an EDI 3301 collection ID. That's a specific grant that has to be given to the SQL ID that's creating the procedures. Let's go to slide 14. One of the harder points, I think, of enabling stored procedures is the RACF considerations. I tried to give as much detail as I could here. It's a little dry to go over in a in a conference like this, but anyway, I'll do my best here. But basically what you need to understand is you've got to choose a WLM user ID, and I'll use that WLM underscore user ID everywhere you need to put in your own ID that you choose. But this ID must be authorized to run RRSAF, that's that attachment facility we talked about earlier. And then you can use one of two ways. RACF provides to associate a user ID and group with started tasks. We use the started procedures table, but you could also use the started class. Then we created a started profile called EDISP01.*, with owner the WLM user ID. That basically assigns the JCL that's running, for the proc that I gave previously, that is assigning this user ID to run that job or address space. Then you create a RACF DSNR WLM ENV profile with the DB2 subsystem name, .WLMENV, .EDISP01. This is with the owner equal to whatever your DB2 group is. That's something your DDA obviously is going to be involved with, and universal access is none. Then you need to permit the WLM user ID and the WDI client user IDs read access to this WLM ENV profile. Then you create a RACF DSNR WLM refresh profile, which is your DB2 subsystem, WLM underscore refresh, EDISP01. And then you also do a permit for read. And again, appropriate users here isn't necessarily all of the WDI client users. It's the people who will need to either quiesce refresh or restore the application environment. So again, that's not necessarily the WDI client user. It could be your DBA, could be somebody probably, this is going to be a little more limited. Then you do a, you create a RACF server profile called DB2 and dot subsystem name, dot EDISP01, and then permit EDISP01 to the server profile. Let's go to slide 15. And lastly, you do the add the OMVS external link for WDI's command script interpreter, EDI server. Basically, EDI server is the first program that's getting involved when you invoke a stored procedure. It then, based on what request it is, it decides how to, you know, what other programs that will need to be invoked. But that external link is necessary to get the wheels turning. DB2 will execute WDI as a RACF user ID defined in the RACF started procedures table or via the started class. Again, I mentioned earlier there was two ways to assign that user ID to the particular address space. You create an OMVS segment for that WLM user ID, set the home directory to /u/ WLM user ID. Then you can open any shell interpreter available on ZOS. I use OMVS primarily. It's under ISPF option 6. Ensure that the home directory exists by doing the CD to that directory, to the home directory. Typically, this will be the present working directory after you enter OMVS. If it's not, create that directory using the make dir. Okay, and then change to that directory after you've created it, or if you're already there, of course, just stay there. Then add the external link by executing the ln command from the home directory. It's important you do it from there, and case is extremely important. And again, the WLM user ID is the ID that you chose, and it would be however you created that home directory. Again, in my case, it's lowercase, so that would be okay. If that's how you created it, that's what the home directory is, that's what it should be. Let's go to slide 16. Now we'll go through some, because that basically ends the steps 4 and 5 that I talked about earlier, which, you know, I'm augmenting here. We're pretty much done with the enabling part. Now I'm just going to go through a couple of the commands that you use to either get around and see how the WLM address space is working. That's what we'll start with here. And I use some MVS system commands here showing you how to display the application environments that are defined. That's what the first command there is showing you. It's for all of them. You can see that will display all AEs. If you want to look at a specific name, like your particular application environment, you would use WLM, Apple ENV equal the name of your application environment. And you use the vary command to resume a WLM AE. You would do that in the event that it was quiesced for some reason. That could be either due to an ab end or some type of abnormal end that occurred, or somebody actually quiesced it in the DBA group. If you make changes to your PROC or to your WLM AE, you'll need to recycle it by using the refresh. And that way it'll restart the AE, it'll use any JCL changes you made to the PROC, etc. Here's a link that provides all the MVS subsystem commands. You could use this link to see if all the other display commands, but I just tried to give you at least the set of commands that are useful for WLM. And then again, to summary, it's the /d is for display, /v is for vary. Let's go to slide 17. Some useful OMVS commands. And by the way, OMVS is the ISPF command shell. Oh, I'm sorry. OMVS is invoked from the ISPF command shell. But what you're doing with it is you're entering the ZOS Unix System Services function of ZOS, so, or USS, it's often called. And I won't go through all these commands, but they're basically just your basic Unix and AIX-based commands that you might be used to if you work in that environment. Here's just some commands laid out here for your reference. if you happen to have to do some of the work earlier. And again, if you want to see all the USS commands, there's a link provided at the bottom here. Let's go to slide 18. Some useful RACF commands. You can use the RACF list user, or abbreviated LU, to display OMDS segment information. You can just type LU, WLM user ID, and then OMDS, and it will show OMDS information, including home directory. And again, that could be important so you can determine what the home directory is for that OMDS segment that was created for your WLM user ID. And you can use RACF panels. I don't know if you're aware of it, but there's, you know, RACF is an option on your ZOS or ISPF panels, and there's all kinds of features there. Makes it a little bit easier, I think. And again, this isn't something an end user would ever do. This is definitely going to be handled by your system group. But you can change even the home directory for the OMDS segment using RACF panels. And I gave you a link here to some other RACF commands. Obviously, RACF is a huge product. It has a lot of different commands. And just gave you that link for your reference. Let's go to slide 19. Now we're going to go into some problem determination. These first three cases are things that have come up via the support center. Customers have called us with these particular errors and just trying to head off any problems you might encounter. These are seem to be the most common problems. And we'll start with a case where a WDI client user was using the document store. They submitted a reconstruct, but it fails with a 16.213, unable to submit the request. And it even tells you in the message, verify the WDI stored procedure are properly installed and are available, and it gives you a specific return code. In this case, a 129 or a 134. These are the cases we've seen come in to our support center. And the cause of either of these would be from Unix System Services spawn function, likely not having a home directory, or it's missing that external link we talked about. Solution, you could first verify using that RACF command, the list user, make sure that they have an OMDS segment defined. And if you see, as a result of that command, if you see no OMDS information is returned, then you obviously need to create one, create an OMDS segment. And then if you do have the OMDS information and it's returned, check that home setting to make sure that's where you put that external link. And again, that was with the LN command and a couple of slides previously. For other USS return codes, in other words, there is a whole variety. You know, 129 and 134 are just the couple that we have seen so far. There is a whole assortment of them, and there's a link to guide you to them. Let's go to slide 20. Another case here, kind of similar, but a very different cause. An error occurred attempting to execute an SQL stored procedure. The stored procedure was this name, and it says no authorized routine named, and it gives a name of exec2. Incompatible arguments were found. The cause, the stored procedure is not defined or cannot be found, or the WLM user ID associated with that RACF started class or started procedures table, or the invoker WLM user ID is not authorized to execute the routine. How you solve the problem? You check the WLM address space running on ZOS, make sure it is up. Verify that your DB2 definitions that create procedure in this library for EDIS DB2, that's your DDL that creates all your DB2 objects. Make sure that that was run for the create procedure and have the proper WLM environment name specified when you did the create procedure. Also, lastly, verify that the DB2 grant execute on procedure commands were run, and there's the member EDIS GRNT where we provided the grant. If you get other SQL return codes, realize this is just talking about the SQL 0440N, and go to this link that I provided, and hopefully that will guide you to what you need to do. Let's go to slide 21. another case where, again, it doesn't really matter if you're using the document store, resubmitting a command, or submitting some form of command that's going to need to go off to the stored procedure. It doesn't have to be the document store. It could be from issuing remote command submission, you know, where you want to actually invoke perform commands. That will also encounter all of these same errors. It's just any time we're going out to the stored procedure, that's when you're going to see errors like this if you don't have it set up properly. In this case, we have an error attempting to execute stored procedure. Stored procedure is, again, EDI exec 2, and it gives a different SQL message there. And the best thing to always follow when it comes to if you get DB2 messages, if you get a reason code, you know, kind of a cryptic 00E7900C, you can just take that reason code, go Google it, and you'll get your answer pretty much right on the spot there. Those are always the best messages when you see reason codes. You always run to the reason code to look for what to do. In this case, that particular code indicates a call statement could not be processed. And the solution here is, again, that maybe you didn't define the procedures or had the wrong WLM environment name specified, so you can use the alter function, you know, to add the proper or change the name from maybe you used the default when you created it, which was EDISP01, but actually used a different name or chose a different name, but didn't change your create procedure statement. It could also be the WLM policy definition. You use that very command we had before to activate this new definition. Or if the WLM application environment is quiesced, use that very command I gave you examples earlier on how to resume it. For other DB2 reason codes, you can search this information center, but like I said, I often just Google it. They're so unique, it almost always just brings you right to what you need. Let's go to slide 22. Just some general problem determination. This is not a specific scenario, but the first place you would probably want to check is the actual WLM application environment address space itself. You know, in other words, check the job that's running. See if you have any system messages up at the top part of the job, you know, in the job log. See if you have any extra messages, you know, within that. Typically, you saw the JCL was not long. So it's usually not too hard to scan through that. And as a last resort, we do have tracing for WDI client remote submissions. And basically, it's just the existence of this directory under the WLM user ID. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it doesn't belong under the WLM user ID. No, just the existence of the directory /TMP/EDI proc. And that triggers WDI to write trace files to that directory. Now, for the WLM user ID to be able to create these files, it, of course, requires write permission. And typically, since it's just the temp directory, you can just set all permissions, and the OMDS command is changemod 777, then the directory name. All right, slide 23. That pretty much completes my presentation. Just in summary, I went over DB2 and how it uses WLM address spaces to run stored procedures on ZOS, and the WDI uses stored procedures only for submitting remote clients, WDI client user requests. WDI client 3.3 is required to run the document store functions previously available under TSO or CICS. In other words, the green screens are gone. We also covered how to enable WDI stored procedures. And lastly, how to diagnose common problems. And that ends my presentation. Thank you, everyone. Elijah, over to you.
Thanks, John, for a great presentation.
And we'll take a question from Poyang Liu.
Yes, the question is, I saw this a page talk about a RegApp setup, and the question is, why we need two profiles? And also the additional, there's a refresh profiles.
Let's see, which slide was that again?
I think it's on page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The
ICAF considerations. That was slide 14.
14, somewhere, 14. The enabling WPS top procedures, ICAF considerations.
Mm-hmm.
And this slide, they, in the middle, they create ICAF DSNR, WLAN environment profile, and also SSNM, WLAN environment.edisp01 profile.
You mean there's the first one? I think what you're talking about is the subsystem name .wlmenv.edis or PS01. Actually, that should be a typo. I see that should be SP01, not PS. I don't know if that's not the confusion, Mel, that you had. I don't think, but that is just to allow the user to actually start, you know, to allow the started task to be created. You know, et cetera. It's just the basic need for when, you know, the first thing that occurs, the client submits the request, it goes to that external link, and it starts the task, and it ends up trying to, and to be able to start the actual WLM environment, it needs to be authorized.
Okay.
This particular RECF resource name, and that's the WLMENV.EDISP01. The WLM underscore refresh profile is just for controlling who is allowed to refresh the environment.
Oh, okay.
Not run it, but refresh it, which is that goes one step farther, right? To be able to refresh it means you can knock it down, you can bring it back up, you can. But that's why I said appropriate users there, not the WDI client users. You know, you wouldn't necessarily give that kind of authority to an end user, right? That might be something a DBA would have.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Oh, sure. Do you have anything else?
No.
Okay. Thanks.
Once again, if anybody would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your touchtone telephone at this time.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us in future presentations, which will be announced on the Western Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, John, for presenting today.
Yep, thank you, everyone. Thanks, Elijah.